Welcome to the award-winning Champions Mojo, hosted by two world record-holding athletes. Be inspired as you listen to conversations with champions. And now, your hosts, Kelly Pallas and Maria Parker.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Champions Mojo podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Pallas, and as usual, I am co-hosting with Maria Parker. Hey, Maria.
Hey, Kelly. It's great to be here with you today.
Great to see you. And what a treat we are in for today. Our special guest today is world-renowned swim coach Paul Newsome, all the way from Perth, Australia. Paul is the founder of Swim Smooth. And if you don't know about Swim Smooth, you are really going to want to check this out and listen to this show. Paul is a former professional triathlete. He raced as part of the British world-class triathlon program while he was studying sports and exercise science at the University of Bath. And you are going to love the story of how Paul helped my own swimming performance from the other side of the world. We'll get to that later. But Paul is not only an amazing coach, he's an accomplished athlete himself. Maria, can you share more about Paul?
Yes. Paul is an open water specialist who successfully completed the English Channel on 9 September 2011 in 12 hours and 14 minutes. He's completed the Rottnest Channel swim four times, as well as won the 2013 Manhattan Island Marathon swim. He also just completed his fifth Rottnest crossing, and after 14 years of trying, finally broke 5 hours. Wow. Last year, he won the Ultra Swim 33.3 in Montenegro and will be trying to defend his title here in a few weeks. But there's a lot more. Let's just get to Paul. Paul, welcome to Champions Mojo.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's really great to be here.
Well, you are amazing.
Yes, yes. So, Paul, first, I've got to start with a little story of how we found you. How are you on the other side of the world? It's nighttime here and you're fresh in the morning, but we had to talk with you because my friends, my family, my swimming community, all they've heard lately is Paul Newsome and Swim Smooth. That's literally like, what is going on with Kelly? And now we have even more to tell as part of the story because most of our listeners know that I just came off of our U.S. Masters National Championship where I won five titles. I dropped all kinds of times, like the times that you swim and you look up at the board and you're like, did I really just drop 20 seconds in my 800? And so I am not kidding.
And you're in the middle of your age group. So this isn't.
And in the middle of my age group, which is even nicer. I didn't just age up. But in all seriousness, yes, we all have a team. And when an athlete performs well, they have to work hard. They have to put in the work. But what this episode, besides we want to learn about what makes you a champion and what you think makes champions, but we also, I have finally realized how important, even at the top level of the sport, how important technique is. Technique. I think that I had been taking it for granted, but it was your videos, your Swim Smooth videos, of watching those videos, I realized that I was doing something terribly wrong in my stroke. I had just somehow veered off the path of what really was my normal stroke. So I started doing a catch-up stroke. I stopped doing my normal two-beat kick. I started to try to do a six-beat kick with a catch-up stroke because, hey, I wanted to look like Katie Ledecky or Michael Phelps or the Olympians. So I watched your videos. You succinctly, scientifically told, very easy to understand, how those things that we're changing in our stroke can slow us down. And I literally made the change in one night. I was swimming the 1500 the next day and I dropped 45 seconds in that 1500. And then 2 weeks later, I had this nationals result. And it's because I am using your techniques. And so that's the long-winded story of why we're so excited about you, why we're so excited about Swim Smooth. So can you just give us some background what Swim Smooth is, how this is a revolutionary thing, I really believe it is, where it started and where you are today?
Thanks very much, Kelly. That's an amazing introduction. When you emailed me and reached out to me telling me that result, I was absolutely thrilled. It's great to hear from anybody who's been following our information around the world and how they've been. And I was telling all my swim squad that I've got this lady over in America. She's just done this 1500 meter time. Long course, 50 meters and just over 20 minutes, 20 minutes and 13 seconds. And we were all working out the average pace of that. because my squad work a lot off pacing, as I'm sure your programs do as well. And I was saying she's 62 years of age. She's averaging just over 120 per 100 for 1500 freestyle. And everyone's like, oh my God, that's amazing. And it was truly amazing. And you were very kind in your introduction there to say that I'd put together this logical scientific approach and it was succinct, etc. But a lot of the feedback that we've been getting is that the videos were actually just simply too long and we haven't been able to actually watch all the way through them. Which is slightly disappointing, really, because when you think about it, you spend an hour and a half in your training sessions. The longest video I've put out there is 30 minutes. And if you think you could revolutionize and transform your swim session in 30 minutes in the pool, and you're telling somebody that you can do that through a video, surely you'd actually listen into that. And I think I hear from swimmers all the time, and this just going back to your question about how did this all start, I've always had the belief that people have actually been bombarded with so much information, whether it's from a friend, another coach, something they've seen on TV or what have you. And people come into swimming very confused. They're not sure what stroke works well for them. They've heard this bit of information, that bit of information. And unfortunately, that's only got worse over the years with social media. I'm not dissing any of the influencers out there and stuff like that. But when you've got to cram your information into 60 seconds and make it look pretty, and you're scrolling through your phone and seeing all these images, and all these bits of advice, it can become really quite overwhelming for people to see that and to try to take it all on board. And what I wanted to do was just simply cut through the clutter with those, with my most recent 5 stroke correction hierarchy series, just cut through that clutter and just say, hey, look, here's the evidence, here's the science, here's the logic. This is what I recommend you do. Go away and do it. And so I'm really glad if you're the only person, Kelly, who's actually watched all the way through that particular video and it's made a difference like that, then I'm happy with that. It's been well worth the effort of doing it. Yeah, and Swim Smooth was literally just born out of that. I created the program in 2004, so nearly 20 years old now. And I was just on the pool deck, on that pool deck right behind me in the video, if anybody's seeing this snippet. It's Challenge Stadium in Perth. It's been used for 2 World Championship events. An amazing facility, 3 50-meter swimming pools all in the same facility. And when I arrived over here as a long-haired backpacker with a big beard and my beads on, I've just been traveling around India and Southeast Asia. Somebody said, you've got to go and see this facility. It's just the most amazing place. And I rocked up there, and sure enough, I was just blown away by it. And luckily, I got offered a job as the local triathlon coach, and we had quite a big program. There's about 350 athletes in that program. And just over the years, I just started to develop a way of coaching, if you like, a way of actually transferring that knowledge across to people. And I came up with this idea in 2004 that I wanted to be able to showcase those learnings in a video format. And bearing in mind, this is way before YouTube or certainly before Instagram. I actually came up with the idea of actually creating a 3-part DVD series. It's like a DVD box set. And my mum came over from the UK and she said to me, what are you going to do with the rest of your life, Paul? You're working for this local triathlon club. They're paying you $125 a week. You can't keep doing that for the rest of your life. I said, I've had this idea. I want to create something. I want to put something out there, some videos that are going to help people. And the initial idea behind this was just to simply make sure that the swimmers in our squad knew why we were doing the techniques and why we're doing those drills. And she loaned me some money, $4,000 right back in the day, 2004, to actually put this DVD together. And I was hoping to maybe sell 100 copies or something like that. And over the years, I think we've sold 150,000 copies of that DVD box set. It's really just snowballed. And it's really funny because that's 20 years ago. Everyone's into online streaming now, but we still get asked for people, can you do a reprint of the original Swim Smooth DVD box set? It looks really nasty, to be honest. The audio quality is absolutely terrible. I look obviously a lot younger than I do right now. But it was the concept was to actually put this together. We had Olympic gold medalist Bill Kirby from here in Perth. He was actually demonstrating all of the drills. And we had 35 different drills on there. But we also showcased genuine footage. And this is really quite important because a lot of times people putting out videos saying, okay, don't do this. And you'll see them actually doing the fault themselves. But it's not a genuine fault. What I wanted to do was actually get a whole host of genuine swimmers doing stuff wrong that we can all relate to and then show them how to actually create and fix that. And by putting out this DVD box set, I gained quite a bit of reputation. Coaches started following what we're doing. And that's my biggest passion, really, is actually helping other coaches help other swimmers improve their own coaching to actually help with that. And we just to round out, in 2010, we got approached by British Triathlon. And they said, look, we want to use your coaching curriculum with all of our coaches in the UK. And that's about 3,500 coaches. And 4 years later in 2014, the International Triathlon Union, now called World Triathlon, contacted us and said, we want to use your methodology in 119 countries around the world. So that's where it went to from there, which is really nice. And it just started in this little pool in the background, not really a little pool, 50 meters, but nonetheless, it started here in Perth.
And not only is the proof in the pudding, and I remember Kelly describing, you were able in your video to describe something very clearly, very succinctly, very simply that actually that Kelly went the next day and put into practice and took an amazing amount of time. But you also are able, using your own techniques, I would assume, to still be an amazing athlete yourself. So I think that says a lot for what you're doing. And I love your passion for helping coaches.
Thanks, Marie. The interesting thing, when I finished that race in Manhattan, I've got to say, Kelly, Manhattan is my favorite city in the whole planet. If I could live there, I would move there in a heartbeat. I love the place. Absolutely love it. I think it's all childhood movies, watching it and stuff like that. To have the opportunity to swim around there in 2013, they'd actually ranked this 48 swimmers swimming, and they had, you have to have swum the English Channel to have done it. So that's why I did the English Channel in 2011, so I could do the Manhattan swim. So 2 years later, we had to write a 5,000 word essay why we wanted to swim around New York.
Wow.
That was part of the entrance. It wasn't just sign up, pay us your money and let's do it. It was like, no, write us a 5,000 word essay on why you want to swim around Manhattan. And I remember Maria reaching out, and I didn't expect to win the event. They'd ranked me fourth. I don't know how they did that, but they expected me to finish fourth on that particular swim. And I took over the lead after about 2.5 hours, and it's a 7-hour swim. Which is great. When you work out the average pace of that, Ahmed Hafnoui's just swum an average of 58.08 seconds for the men's 1500 at the World Championships. And my average pace there was 58 seconds around Manhattan. But that's because of the coach, right?
Wow.
Great stuff. But yeah, so that was pretty good. I just remember Maria reaching out to basically a finishing boy. I reached out and touched the finishing boy at the end of the 48 kilometers, I think it is. And I just thought, you know, the program that I've followed to actually get around and win this race is the program that I've been using at that point for 10 years with the swimmers I've been coaching. And it felt like it was a real, almost like a validation of what I've done, because the guy who finished second, he had a great swim. He was swimming 120 kilometers per week in the training leading up to that. And I've got a young family. You might have even just heard one or two of them just trying to say goodbye to me because they're off to school. And the most I could fit in was about 35 to 40 kilometers of training per week. And I think it's really important. You mentioned, Kelly, earlier on about technique. That's very important. And so too is your approach to the type of training you do and how much frequency and volume you get in as well.
Yes, that race is so elite. I know people that have done it, and it is like one of the crown jewels of being an open water swimmer. So 28 miles. And you were only training 35K a week for that.
Yeah, it's all I could fit in. I was running a business. So 2013, my son would have been four, and my daughter would have been, she would have been less than 2 years old when I was actually training for that. So you can imagine having a four-year-old and a two-year-old. My wife's a physiotherapist, so she's got her own business as well. I'm running my coaching on the pool deck. There's just simply no way that I could do the sort of volumes that I really wanted to do. So I just had to become really smart with the type of training that I was doing. And that's exactly what I did. And really, that result there, by far and away, my best result in swimming. As a kid, you mentioned earlier on, Kelly, again, I really appreciate the sentiment you said about how you watched this one video and it transformed your swimming. But the reality is, probably what that video really did was it just brought you back to where you should have been as an individual swimmer. You've done the hard yards, you've done the training and stuff. You said you'd experimented with a technique which wasn't quite working for you. And really all the video did was it just pointed you back in the right direction, which is what the program, which is what SwimSmooth is all about. It's about working and making sure that the swimming technique works for you as an individual. And it's the same thing with Manhattan. I couldn't fit the big distances that I wanted to do. I just had to get really smart with it.
Being smart, that is such a key these days to performing well. So Maria and I love to hear because compared to you two, so Maria does the ultra distance 12-hour bike races, 24-hour bike races. She's world record holder and has been in the 12-hour and the 24. So I'm in excruciating pain in a 20-minute race. Okay, so that's painful to me, but I still love to talk to other endurance athletes about pain. So maybe Manhattan was the perfect race, because when you do hit that magical race, which sounds like Manhattan was for you, maybe you didn't have as much pain. But talk with us about all these open water swims, these distance swims that you're doing where you hit that place where, yeah, you're trying to hold on to your technique. You're trying to keep your mind. But let's talk about that mindset part of being this champion that you are and the coach that you are.
You know, I think marathon swimming teaches a big lesson in life, if you like, about keeping going and soldiering on and moving forwards and not looking back and just focusing on the way you're actually heading to. And I think with the marathon swimming events that I've done, you're quite right. Manhattan did not feel hard at all. It was so weird. It was almost like I was having an out-of-body experience when I was actually swimming it. People said to me, wasn't the water dirty? Wasn't it smelly? Weren't you worried about getting sick? And I was worried about all of those things, but I remember the water looking like minty blue. It was just weird. It was 14 degrees Celsius. So what is that? 56 degrees Fahrenheit. And we were non-wetsuits, so we weren't allowed to wear a wetsuit. We were in there for 7 hours and a bit. And unfortunately, people said, yeah, was it really hot? And I can't tell them it was hard because I actually felt brilliant on that swim. Like everything just worked like TikTok, basically. It went really well. That being said, of course, I've done other swims where it's been terrible. I have really gone through the ringer, as we call it over here in Australia.
Workouts, certainly some of the workouts leading up to it were hard. So how do you manage that?
Oh, absolutely. And I've got a few friends who say train smart or train hard so that you can actually feel easy on the day. And that's really what it felt like for Manhattan. But there was an event, the Montenegro event that I did last year. It's a really interesting concept. So it's a 4-day event. It's called the Ultra Swim 33.3. It's a 4-day event. So it's a little bit like a stage race, a little bit like Tour de France, if you like. And I went over there. It was the inaugural event last year. They'd asked me to coach everybody who I was going to race against, which was an interesting concept. So we rock up there. There was about 50 people racing. And I had to do a video analysis session with every single person that was part of their entry. So over the 4 days that I was actually racing, I was actually coaching 15, 16 people a day as well. So we'd do the race in the morning, then I had to work for 8 or 9, 10 hours back to back to do the stroke correction with them. But unfortunately, it left me feeling absolutely terrible during that four-day swim and the bad feeling in terms of the physical bad feeling that I had just at the back of my mind and just thought, got to just keep going here. One stroke after the next, basically. A little bit like Dory. I know everyone uses that terminology. Just keep swimming. But it's absolutely true. And isn't life like that? It's keeping soldiering on, moving forwards and making sure you're not looking backwards.
Yeah, I love that. And so the self-talk literally is one stroke, one stroke, one stroke.
Yeah. Even for Manhattan. So Manhattan was freezing cold. It was unseasonably cold, but I hate getting into cold water just like anybody else. But I seem to have this sort of natural affinity once I'm in there and working well with it. So dived in and I couldn't focus on anything else other than just one stroke the next. And I've got a little mantra within Swim Smooth, we call it bubble breathe, which is just to basically focus on your exhalation underneath the water. And people said to me, how did you win that race? What did you do? And I said, well, I was just thinking, what did you do with your technique? And I was just saying, bubble, bubble, breathe, bubble, bubble, breathe. And I think I worked it out. I said that 36,000 times to get around. That's all I did. There's no magic to it sort of thing. It was just literally consistently saying the same thing over and over again.
And Maria, you're loving bubble, bubble, breathe, aren't you? So Paul, Maria is a new swimmer and I want her to ask you some new swimmer questions because so her very first swim race she's ever done, remember, she's married to my brother, who is a great swimmer. Okay. He's a great swimmer, just excellent swimmer. We convinced Maria to do her first U.S. Masters race, which just happened to be our U.S. national championship.
Yeah, you can do this.
It's a 2-mile cable swim in Lake Placid. Oh. In New York. And this was her first race and she did it. She did the race. But so a swimmer like Maria, who really is, her technique is uncoached. She just is like somebody who does triathlons. She swims in a triathlon. And so when Jim and I look at her, we try to help her with general stuff. But if you were going to give some advice to just our listeners that are triathletes or to Maria, I love bubble, bubble, breathe. Is there anything else?
Well, bubble, bubble, breathe is really useful because it just focuses and centers you on one thing that you can control. So I like the idea and the concept with the bubble, bubble, breathe, because it's just so super, super simple. When people are nervous and anxious, the first thing they do is they tend to hold on to their breath like this, basically. And what they tend to do is they go into a little bit of a panic and they'll be going to take a breath in, but they'll still be blowing out when they should be breathing in. Mm-hmm. So just by getting them to say bubble, bubble in the water, as silly as that sounds, it just helps you really focus on that rhythm. Another couple of little tips that I like, especially for newer swimmers, especially in the open water, is one, make, if you're going to be wearing a wetsuit, for example, a lot of people put these wetsuits on and they don't spend the time putting them on properly. They don't pull them up properly over their shoulders and they tend to feel really quite tight and rigid. Wetsuits should feel very nice and actually help you improve your swimming with the buoyancy, et cetera. But if you don't take the time to actually pull it on properly over the shoulders, we've got a really useful video on that, actually. I call it the human shoehorn. So you get somebody in there and they're actually shoehorning you into the wetsuit, basically. And, you know, that's a really useful thing. By and large, when people are first getting into swimming, one of the biggest things that they're actually trying to overcome is drag, trying to reduce how much their legs are dragging in the water. Now, that's not universal across all swimmers, though, because a lot of, especially a lot of female swimmers, even when they're very new to swimming, do tend to float pretty well in the water. And they have a lot of people would say it's a different body mass and those type of things, percentage between fat and muscle. But a lot of it, to be honest with you, a lot of it can be just, a lot of ladies just take it a lot steadier and a lot smoother. A lot of guys that I see when they're first getting into it, just fighting and bashing against the water. And that's not efficient at all. So I think by and large, most ladies that I start out with, there's a lady called Megan who swims here in Perth. We've since called her Mega Megan, because when she joined the squad, she was swimming 2 minutes 14 per 100 meters in long course pool when she started out. And in my squad over here in Perth, that would actually put her at the back of our slowest lane in the entire squad. And just by working on her technique and refining the type of training she was doing, she managed to knock off. She was actually swimming 1 minute 34 per 100.
Wow.
She sustained over a 5K swim. So 40 seconds improvement over 100 meters. And the interesting thing with Megan is that, just answering that question again about tips and techniques and stuff, Megan, when she started out, already looked quite good in the water. She was a little bit slow, a little bit timid sort of thing. Her stroke rate was a little bit on the slow side, but we focused on improving that, getting her rhythm up, allowing her to like really become the true swimmer that she wanted to be. And a lot of that was about, Kelly, you mentioned about you experimented with your leg kick and increase in stroke rate. That's basically what I did with Megan as well. And also encourage her to just come along and do the training sessions, because somebody with a very low swimming background might be discouraged from actually doing proper training because they think, oh, that's too far beyond me. I'll just do some drills and what have you. But I didn't do that with Megan. I encouraged her to come along to all the training sessions. She understood the concept behind some of the harder training sessions that we do, like endurance and those type of things. And she, one of the nicest things about the story with her, we've become really good friends over the years, is sometimes I'll tell swimmers, normally the blokes, I'll say, I want you to do this. I want you to work on that. And they'll argue back and they'll say, well, why? Megan didn't do that. She just literally turned her brain off and said, okay, this guy appears to know what he's talking about. I trust what he's talking about. I'm just going to follow what he does. And it took a lot of the ambiguity out of what she was doing. It simplified the whole process for her, basically.
Yeah, that's great. That's encouraging to me because I'm where she was. So you're so right about relaxing in the water, because the first thing that happened in my first 2 mile cable swim was I thought, I got out there, I was like, I'm usually very comfortable in the water, but I got all bunched up. I thought, am I going to drown? Which I never, that it didn't occur to me. That thought would occur to me once I started swimming. Of course, I relaxed and it was fine. But so there's probably a lot of us, people like me, who weren't swimmers, weren't age group swimmers growing up, but love the idea of participating in these longer events or in triathlons. And so I love your style.
Okay. So we don't talk a lot of X's and O's. We like to talk the broader. So we've talked X's and O's, which I could talk all day long about. But we do want to ask you, you are a champion yourself. You've been around so many of these champions, from Ironman champions to everybody that you've studied. What do you feel like are some of the characteristics that really make someone successful, a champion?
I'm going to sound a little corny and a little bit cheesy here, but the Netflix series, no, sorry, not Netflix. It's actually on Apple, Ted Lasso. My wife tried to get me to watch this during COVID, and it took me 5 or 6 attempts to get into it. And I just couldn't, what was the guy, Jason Sudeikis. I just could not get into it. It was a bit too happy for me at the start, especially during COVID, because we were struggling with all of that and getting through that period. But I finally sat down and watched it, and I was blown away, because the message behind that story is all about belief in yourself. And they have this big poster up on the wall, and the soccer team there, they all have to believe in themselves a lot more. And when it comes to looking at great champions, true champions, a lot of them are actually misunderstood. A lot of people say, oh, he's got, or she's got so much bravado. There's too much ego there. There's too much self-belief and stuff. But I don't really believe you can have, there's not enough belief in the world, to be honest with you. Not a lot of people believe themselves, but those champions, they do that. And I just watched at the weekend a Netflix documentary with the cyclist Mark Cavendish, who's, again, another guy that I've followed a lot over the years. And if you haven't watched that documentary, it's fantastic, because I've asked a few people in my squad, I said, what did you think of that interview? And half of them will say, oh, he was too brash. He was too arrogant. I hated it. And some people are like, oh my God, didn't he go through some major obstacles and didn't he bounce back really well? And it was just his belief that he knew that he was the world's best cycling sprinter, but he just had to bring it out of himself again. And he's equaled Eddie Merckx's world record of 34 Tour de France stage wins. He didn't quite get to 35. But then he crashed out this year, unfortunately. But the overriding thing that I see in all those great champions is belief.
So how do we use that as a tool? Like, I just watched the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So good.
Same idea. This guy's very brash, but he could see himself so clearly succeeding at what he wanted to succeed at. So how would you use that? What do you call it? Confidence or brashness or visualization? How would you use it? How can we all use it as a tool regularly? So every time.
Without taking anything away from Arnold Schwarzenegger, I would say go and watch that documentary first and foremost, because his level of self-belief and his visualization of how he mapped out his life, it's in three stages, right? So it's a three-part documentary. First one's all about being the athlete, the bodybuilder. Second one's about being the movie star. And the last one's about being a politician. And I'm not into politics at all, but I still enjoyed the last one because it's still Arnold Schwarzenegger featured it. How do you take that self-belief? I think, especially in today's age, people are always saying, we've got this term over here. I'm not sure you have it in the US, about tall poppy. Don't be a tall poppy. A tall poppy gets its head
right.
Popped.
Right.
Tall poppy syndrome. But the reality is we're all doing these events and things that we're doing, but a manner of different reasons. You might be Arnold Schwarzenegger wanting to win Mr. Universe. You might want to become the best movie star and the biggest packet sort of thing. You might just want to do your local triathlon event and just get around the swim, because that's the thing that's been creating the biggest fear. And I think that belief, having that self-belief, is super, super important. Like I said, I don't have it 100% of the time either, but I think you can promote that self-belief. You can nurture it. You can encourage that self-belief. And one of the ways of doing that is just by setting yourself a little bit of a routine, having a little bit of a formula about what you're going to do, and then just sticking to it. And I've just last week put out a blog to our subscribership. There's 120,000 people follow this swimming blog each week. And people have been sending me feedback about the videos. Some people said, videos are too long. Send me something shorter. And I said, okay, what is it that you want me to write? What content do you want me to put out there? And a lot of people said, I just want to know how to actually improve when I'm not improving. And they're all looking for some sort of silver bullet from me, something that sort of says, okay, that's the thing that's going to make the 30-second improvement or what have you. But equally, a lot of people have been asking me to just go back over some of the basics, just cover some of the basics. And that's what I've done, is I've compiled an 8-week training program that people are actually following online. We put out a survey. I said, look, I'm going to select 8 people from around the world, and you're going to be part of this process. We're going to document your improvement process. We're going to create this little team of 8 people. I'm going to be your coach. And then we're going to put it out to the blog readership each week. And we're going to let them know how you're progressing, where you're doing well, where you're falling back on a little bit. And we're just going to keep it real life, real world situation, putting it out there. And I'm thinking that's going to be, and I'm hoping that's going to be really beneficial for people to see how this thing works. And it's not rocket science. There is no silver bullet. Sorry, that's a bit of a spoiler alert. You're not going to get any. But what it's actually trying to encourage people to do is just to find a rhythm in their routine. And despite what else is going on in their life, we're all dealing with good stuff, bad stuff, and stuff like that. I've always believed that if you can stick to that routine up throughout all the ups and downs in my life, one of the things my constant in my life is that I know how good swimming makes me feel. And I go into the pool Even if I'm not feeling like a swim, I will get in because I've set some time in my schedule. I'm going to do a half an hour swim today. People say to me, oh, half an hour. That's not. What's the point in doing a half an hour swim? I thought you're a marathon swimmer. You should do 20 kilometers. I've only got time for half an hour. I'm going to get in and do half an hour. I'm going to feel great from it. And I've stuck to that routine. And even with my work life as well, like being on the pool deck and stuff, I say to the swimmers all the time, it's super, super important you're consistent in your training. And it's super important I'm consistent as your coach and that I will show up on the pool deck at 5:30 in the morning when I say I'm going to be there. And in 20 years of coaching, I've only turned up late for my coaching once. We were selling a house and we were selling a house 10 years ago. And I remember having a heart attack. I woke up and it was 12 minutes past the start of this swimming session. I was like, oh my gosh. And I raced in there and I got in there a few minutes late sort of thing. And I think it was about 15, 16 minutes late in total. And I got there and one of the swimmers who's been putting up with me, I'm going to say, for many years, he's got a love-hate relationship with the sessions that I create. He'd taken the bull by the horns and just written a session up on the board and everyone started to follow that. But he never, ever lets me forget that one time in 20 years. I do 12 squad sessions a week, every week of the year for 20 years. And it's the one time where I was like 14 minutes late showing up for the swim. And I think in terms of being a coach, leading people and stuff, it's so important they can see that you are being true to what you're actually putting out. It's no good me saying, be consistent, turn up and do your work. If I'm not going to be consistent and turn up and do my coaching, or if I'm not going to turn up and actually do my swimming and stuff. And I've had people over the years tell me, oh, no one really cares if you're into doing your swimming as well. They prefer for you just to be, you know, one of those big fat swimming coaches on the side of the pool and just, but that doesn't really inspire confidence in people. I'm super of the belief that what I do and what people see me doing, and that's really all it's about. And that's what this 8-week program is all about. It's just about, okay, identify what your goals are. It can be something really big and hairy, big, hairy, audacious goal. It can be something really just very minor, but just set your intentions, set those improvement intentions, and then let's go about this 8-week thing, 8-week program, and just simply stick to that plan as best we can. And I think part of the process going through with these 8 swimmers, some of them are really high achievers and you can tell they've already set themselves goals and a schedule which is not going to be realistic to actually stick to. So I've actually told them to just be kind to yourself. Flip back a little bit. If you say you're going to do 5, but you think you might not be able to, just say 4. Let's just start with 4 and let's just try and tick that box. And I'm a bit of a checklist guy. I like to tick off my checklist basically step by step and stuff. And that's all I've got people doing is just literally just ticking off that checklist and getting down to the pool and doing it.
If people want to follow these 8 people, is that at swimsmooth.com?
Yes, swimsmooth.com. Okay. If you go to swimsmooth.com, we actually put out the entire plan. So each week, every Friday afternoon, it'd be Friday a.m. your time. I basically just send out, okay, this is what we're doing this week. This is how the swimmers went from last week. So they're almost like they're following what I'm doing. They're a week ahead. They're basically a week ahead of the subscribership and they can just follow along with what we're doing. So last week, it was all just about setting your benchmark, knowing exactly where you're starting. What is your threshold pace? Without getting too scary behind. Sometimes people think, oh, I get really scared about setting a threshold pace or setting any time. I hate doing a time trial. Don't like to know. But if you don't know where you're starting from, how are you going to know if you've improved at all? Like so many people say to me, oh, my swimming has not improved for 3 years. I said, so tell me, where is your swimming at the moment? And they'll go, and they can't honestly answer me exactly where they're at. They can't tell me what their PB is. They can't tell me what pace they hold for 10 100s because they're just simply not tuned into it. So, you don't have to become super anal and pedantic about numbers. I love numbers. You don't have to become that person, but you do need to know your starting point. You do need to know where that benchmark is at, and you don't need to be afraid of doing it. Who cares what it is? Who cares whether you're swimming at 220 per 100 or 145 per 100 or 150? Who cares? Doesn't matter. You don't need to tell anyone. You just need to know it yourself. And then if you know where it is, then you can set those intentions to actually move forwards from that point. And that's really what this program is all about. It's, like I say, it's not rocket science. It's not a silver bullet. It's just focusing on those basics and those fundamentals.
That's awesome. And there's so much great content on your website, like literally everything we've talked about on the show and this new these new eight swimmers sounds fantastic. We're going to ask you the last question. What is a little known fact about you that our listeners might enjoy?
Believe it or not, I was on a UK dating show in 2001. On TV, it was the most watched TV show that year. 25 million people tuned into this dating show. And it's called Blind Date. I don't know if you've got a similar show over there in America, but basically there's one person, either a guy or a girl, picking. And then behind this screen, there are three people. It just so happened that they were doing interviews for Blind Date at the university where I was at. And one of my friends said, I'm going to go and apply for this. Will you come down and support me? And I had no intention of going and interviewing for this thing. Why don't you just come along and have a little bit of a go? Just be a bit of fun. So I did it. I did the first round of interview and I got called up for the second round. And I didn't hear from them for about 3 months. And I was out riding my bike, training up for a triathlon. And then one day I got this phone call and it was the producer. And he said, we want you to come on TV. We want you to come over down to London, be on the show. The producers are like, we hear you doing triathlon. The producer was interested in it. I've seen them wearing some funny clothing on this, on these triathlons. What is it you wear? So, oh, I have to wear this Speedo skin suit and it's really tight. And I said, we want you to wear that on the show.
Oh my gosh.
Way. There's no way I'm going to wear that Speedo skin suit on that show. But they twisted my arm behind my back. They plied me with a couple of beers, I think. And sure enough, I went on this show, it was filmed live and stuff from this live audience. I went on the show in this tight Speedo skin suit with a Union Jack flag wrapped around my shoulders. And I had to tell my story about triathlon. And ultimately, this girl, Anita was her name. She picked me because I was talking about being an athlete. And she had this picture of an athlete being this 6'4" guy with massive broad shoulders. Maybe like Michael Phelps or somebody like that. And she saw this scrawny little guy walk out from behind the screen. I'm 5'10". Back then I was weighing, 140 pounds or something like that.
Oh, no.
Tiny and skinny. I was shorter than she was.
Oh, no.
I was wearing this Union Jack, had this tight skin suit. And she just thought, oh, my God, what have I let myself in for? The great experience.
That sounds fun.
It's great. It sounds like triathlon has led you to some of the greatest things in your life, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I want to be helping people improve their swimming. And that is what I want to do. That's the life that I've set out for myself. And I wouldn't trade that for anything else.
Well, that's beautiful. Beautiful way to end.
And the cool thing is that your content is reaching people across the world. So that's cool. Okay. So Paul, we do have the sprinter round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is your favorite sandwich?
Oh, cheese and pickle.
Okay. What do you own that you should throw out?
Oh, GoPro video cameras.
Okay. What is the scariest animal to you?
Oof. Dog.
What celebrity would you most like to meet?
In the swimming world, certainly Katie Ledecky and Michael Phelps.
What is the hardest swimming event in the pool in your mind?
Oh, good question. I think 400 IM.
Okay. Kickboard?
No kickboard.
If you have to listen to a song for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Sorry, if I had to listen to
a song, any song.
A song. I love Coldplay. So probably be Coldplay Clocks.
All right. Window or aisle?
Window, definitely.
Okay. Describe your life in 5 words.
Ooh. Fortunate. Exciting. Challenging. Two more. Fun.
I think that's
and energetic.
I'd say that applies. Okay, last one. What word comes to mind when you dive in the water?
Release.
Nice. I like that. Beautiful. All right, Paul, this has been such a pleasure. So wonderful. And we just thank you for being on here. We know our listeners are going to love this interview and get a lot out of it.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for having me, y'all. It's been great chatting with you both.
Oh, it's terrific. Thank you.
Stay tuned for the takeaways.
Swimmers, protect your skin and hair from chlorine damage with TriSwim. This swimmer-specialized personal care line of shampoo, conditioner, body wash, and lotion gently removes pool chemicals or salt water while hydrating and strengthening your hair and skin. Say goodbye to dryness and itchiness. Visit SBRSports
sprsportsinc.com. That's sprsportsinc.com.
And use code MOJO23 for 23% off. Hurry, offer ends in 30 days. Get TriSwim today.
And now, the takeaways.
Okay, Maria, the takeaways for Paul Newsome from Swim Smooth. What an incredible interview. Even though it is now 10 o'clock at night while we are recording this, and we're
so energized.
We're usually asleep by now, but there were a lot of takeaways. What was your very first takeaway?
I love set your benchmarks, know where you're starting from. I think lots of times we can just throw ourselves into, I'm going to get started tomorrow, or I'm going to get started going. If you don't have a benchmark, you don't know if you've improved and you don't know if you're improving. So I think that's what he talked about. I think it's probably harder with swimming than it is with cycling. We do that in cycling pretty easily. You always do a functional threshold test, but I have never done it in swimming. I have no idea where I'm starting from. So I love the idea of set your benchmark so you know where you're starting from.
Yes. Yeah. And it's actually easy to do in swimming.
Yeah.
Arguably easier than in cycling. You've got a pace clock on every pool deck and you literally swim a hard 50, see what your time was and write down that time. So setting your benchmarks, know what that pace is. Was that 100%? Was that 80%? Was that 50%?
Yeah.
So it always floors me when I'm in practice and we're doing like a set of pace 50s and I might turn to somebody and say, what were you holding on those? Oh, I have no idea what I was holding on those. We should know what we're holding or what we're capable of holding. So yeah, I love that. Set your benchmark. The whole theme of, for me, what I've learned from it and what I benefited from and what I think Swim Smooth is about is efficiency versus aesthetics. And we all get wrapped around the axle of what we look like in the water. Do we look like we have to take too many strokes? Do we look like our stroke is short? Are we too splashy? Whatever it is, it's about efficiency. And Paul really frees us up from worrying about what we look like as long as we are efficient. And that's based on tempo and the number of strokes that you're taking and the power and what you're doing efficiently and not just what you look like.
Yeah, I thought he drove that point home really well. And that's encouraging for anybody, especially a beginning swimmer. Surely there's technique. I know I can improve. My technique's terrible. But just thinking about getting more efficient and not worrying about where is my hand or my elbow or whatever. I'm sure that there are things that I could do that would make me more efficient. But I don't know, just the whole idea, like you said, of not looking a perfect swimmer and just being free to get out there and swim hard.
Yes, yes. So how about your last one?
Second one, I love this, something that I think about a lot is belief. We talked about about confidence. This is a hard one for me just because I don't like to overpromise and underdeliver. But I love the concept of telling yourself, it's self-talk, it's vision, it's believing in yourself, my belief that I can, that with what I've got, I'm going to go and do the best that I can. And feel confident going in, that confidence. I thought that was really good. And we talked about how you can use that in life and in swimming. And like he said, when he went to the Manhattan swim, he knew he had done what he could with what he had. And he was just going to get out there and do the best he could. And he knew he was going to be able to do that. And he felt great and he had a great swim. And I think that's just a great thing to remind myself. I get, just distracted from that. I almost always go into the event having done all the preparation that I could. So I just need to focus on that and believe in myself. So that was a good takeaway for me.
Yeah. Belief is half of it is just what we're telling ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
just that's huge. It's just believe in yourself. It's an important trait of champions.
Yeah.
And my second one to talk about is just consistency in training, how important it is to get in a routine and just stick with the routine.
Yeah,
and then
that gives you
the belief. It gives you the confidence if you've done the work. And he said for 20 years, he's coached 12 sessions a week and never missed. He's never missed one. I think he was late to one in 20 years, but he's never missed one. So he walks the walk as a coach. Right. He lives the consistency. And that is the way that we become successful is with consistency.
Yeah. I love that idea. And it's not that you have to be consistently working out 6 days a week. You got to be consistent in whatever you're going to do. If you're working out 2 days a week. yeah, just put your 2 days in every single week and don't let this slip to one or zero. So it doesn't have to be consistent, meaning, oh my gosh, you're doing this huge volume. And I love he told that story about his own performance based on what time he had for. So I think I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you only have time for a 20-minute swim, then you only swim for 20 minutes.
And then you just do it. You do it consistently. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Maria. Another great one in the books. Yeah, love you.
Love you too, Kelly. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Champions Mojo podcast. Did you enjoy the show? We'd be grateful if you would leave us a 5-star review on iTunes to help others find us. And we'd also love to hear from you. We're on all social media platforms, or you can reach us at championsmojo.com.